Listening Library presents Etherbound by E.K. Johnston. Read for you by Ashley Eckstein. Content warning. This book contains a scene of medical violence. Characters also obsess about food and count calories. Take your broken heart. Make it into art. Carrie Fisher. When the Stavanger Empire turned its eyes to the stars, seeking new worlds to conquer, it found exactly what it was looking for. Planet after planet came under the Imperial banner, the conflict providing impetus for the original warring Stavanger states to stick together as the Empire grew. Worlds that could support life were colonized. Worlds that could not were stripped of their resources and left spinning in the dark. And then the Armada reached the edge of the Stavanger solar system, looked at its great ether workers, and wondered what it was going to do next. The Star Mages had the answer. There were so many stars after all, and some were closer than others, and therefore reachable. The Metal Mages used the ether to build ships, and the Grain Mages used the ether to stock them, but the travelers themselves were wary. The distance was so vast, and the destinations largely unknown. The Stavangers cried out for a hero, and they got one. A new kind of mage, one who could combine metal and sky, making wells to hurl ships over the vast distances and nets to catch them when they arrived. It was dangerous, and it took all the years of the mage's life, not to mention several generations of her descendants. But when the well and net relay was done, there were 7 bright stations between the Stavanger system and that of their target, the Maritech. A journey that might have taken generations at normal sublight speeds now took days of quick jumps that crossed distances so vast the mind could scarcely comprehend them. The first Stavanger ships that landed in the Maritech net were not ungreeted. It's hard to conceal such a large construction project, after all, even if you're using magic. The Maritech knew that they were coming and met them in force. 5 times the great waves of the Stavanger Armada broke into Maritech space, and 5 times they were repelled. Not even ether gave the Stavangers an edge, for the Maritech had a form of it themselves. A few foolhardy mining ships were able to sneak through the lines and collect gases from the outer planets in the system. But no Stavanger ship so much as pierced atmosphere on an inhabited Maritech world. The Empire, humiliated, withdrew. And the Maritech destroyed the station that supported the last net in the relay so that no jump could ever be caught. The only logical conclusion after none of the adventurous ships that made the jump from Brannock Station ever returned. Determined to salvage something from their disastrous effort to colonize the stars, the failing Stavangers began exploiting those resources that could be found near the remaining space stations they had built. Initially restricted to asteroid mines and the odd nebula for gas collection, Stavanger ships soon began encountering huge numbers of a space-going creature they call Oglossa. At first, the creatures were just slaughtered to clear the space lanes, which will give astute observers an idea of how many there were. But eventually, some scientists analyzed the remains and realized that the Stavangers had, almost entirely by accident, discovered the most perfect food source in the known universe. The Oglossa were massacred. Billions of tons of them were caught in the blackness of space and brought to the stations for processing. The stations, meant to be merely way stations and restocking points for traveling armies, were redesigned to house trade at the levels in the capital of the Stavanger homeworld. Oglossa were almost pure protein, which the ether workers needed to perform their magic, and contained enough vitamins A, C, and D to prevent the 2 most common immunodeficiencies found on long-haul space travel. And it didn't go bad. Ever. The Stavangers no longer needed wells and nets to travel through the farthest distances of space. Instead of building expensive installations, ships could now be stocked with enough food to last the journey. Instead of spending the lifetimes of dozens of mages building one road, they could spend the lifetimes of thousands of colonists creating hundreds. A properly supplied and coordinated colony ship could be sent out at regular sublight speeds, and the crew could just reproduce until they got where they were going, as long as the ship stayed sound and those aboard it kept track of their stores. Plans were made, designs were drawn, calories were counted. Colonists were screened for suitability. And then, disaster struck. A burst of unknown radiation erupted out of the Stavanger sun and swept through space at an almost scientifically impossible rate. It left organic matter unharmed and electronics unburned. It didn't interrupt sound waves or fritz out the invisible pathways by which information was transmitted. But the ether was fried. Even the greatest living masters of magic struggled to muster enough power to boil an egg, and since there were easier ways to heat water, they didn't try. Only magic that had already been done remained. Fortunately, this included the wells and the nets, though they now had to be manually controlled from aboard each station. The seven stations saw their chance and took it, desperately trying to secede from the Empire as the Armada was drawn back to the homeworld to protect the aristocracy from insurrection. Despite the station's bravery and general good timing, the Empire had one last blow to strike. The most powerful remaining Stavanger grain mages were stuffed to the gills with all the food they could stomach, and then forced to spend their life's energy on one last great work. So the station's rebellion died, or at least died down. The economy shifted once the general die-off was over, and eventually some sense of order returned. The Empire fell apart, but their successors formed a complicated hegemony to exert power over the home system and continued to bicker amongst themselves over who should benefit most from the wealth collected from the stars. Parts of the Armada had been abandoned in space when magic was broken, and to survive, the crews of those ships turned to depravities best left unmentioned. On the stations, life continued. The Oglassa were a memory too far away to reach, and so the people scratched out resources from asteroids and gas clouds and hoped against hope that the mines would last forever. And gradually, the ether healed, and the magic came back. Part 1. You'll Never Leave Harlan Alive. Chapter 1. The first time Pent Harland saw the stars, she was 5 years old. She was watching her brothers play Spark in the creche on board the Harland, where the family children learned ship operations in the guise of competitive play, and the lines of alliance formed before teeth were cut. Pent couldn't play Spark. Or she could, but she lost every time, and so no one wanted to be on her team. She couldn't make the cards light up yet, activating the necessary circuits to identify a match in her opponent's hand, let alone find the set in her partner's. She was a liability, and so she always sat out. On the bright side, this gave her more time to study the less popular aspects of the Harland. While her brothers learned to run the engines, Pent taught herself everything she could about interstellar travel itself. It was a strange thing, knowing oneself useless at 5. Space was dark and cold, and worked against life in most of its forms. For a human to be in space while also being a liability was dangerous, for the human and for everyone around her. Pent did her best to stay out of the way and to excel wherever she could. Her bed was always made the most neatly. She always scraped her plate the cleanest, getting every trace of protein from the meal. She cleaned up the creche if her brothers or cousins forgot something, and she always volunteered to run errands when a messenger was called to run.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?